Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond, reading to you and with you today the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 9th, 2016. We'll begin with an article on the front page, and this is the headline, Mount Zion Barbershop Group, an International Hit. And this was written by Ryan Voiles. When John Loans and the rest of Some Assembly Required touched down in Reno, Nevada in late January, they had little experience in the culture of barbershop. To pass the time as they went through the airport shuttle, the group of 14 students from Mount Zion High School began to mumble a song to one another. What they did not know was they were within earshot of the barbershop senior champions of 1997, who decided to jump in and sing along. Immediately, once we were off the plane, we were singing with past champions, said Loans, a Mount Zion senior. We sang together all the way to the hotel. Just like that, the Mount Zion Barbershop a cappella group got a taste of what they were in for as the first ever representative from Illinois at the Barbershop Harmony Society's annual International Midwinter Convention. Nearly 50 teams from as far away as China and Sweden took part in the convention over the final weekend of January, performing their pieces and sharing a bond over their love of barbershop. Though the language barriers were there, the singers shared the language of barbershop style. As Rich Hansen said, the issues addressed in the music are similar to people of all walks of life. A lot of barbershop songs have common, relatable things, love, friendship, brotherhood, and camaraderie, said Hansen, director of Some Assembly Required. It doesn't matter how young or old you are, they are issues people relate to anywhere. An international conference appearance is an impressive feat, let alone for a group that did not exist as of a year ago. Hansen has helped establish several quartets during his tenure, including a barbershop group shortly after he started in the late 1990s. With the return of Mount Zion Show Choir director Connie Mulligan, a longtime supporter of the musical style, Hansen decided to create Some Assembly Required as an 8-member group at the beginning of the school year. The group later expanded to 14 as it prepared for the trip to Reno, as support from Mulligan and financial support from parents made the trip possible. Even with stigma of barbershop as an old style of music, with big mustaches and outfits, members of the group had various reasons for wanting to become a part of the newly formed a cappella group. For Loans, it was rooted in a history of barbershop in his family. My dad always loved to sing barbershop, so he was always singing around the house, made me curious about it, he said. Last year, when this came around, I asked Mr. Hansen if I could try out and join. Blake Eggers, a junior who joined the group in December, just ahead of their trip to Reno, was looking forward to a cross-country trip, but also a chance to try something new. Like many in the group, Eggers is a member of the school's show choir group, but the chance to do barbershop adds an element to his musical education. Barbershop took my vocal education to a whole other place that I couldn't before, Egger said. Unlike some of the other musical styles, barbershop relies completely on the voice. With just a handful of members, the group has to replicate all the backing instruments and melody with their voices to accompany the more traditional singing. While only one more trip to Peoria is planned for the school year, the impact of the past few months already has far-reaching effects. Members such as junior Wade England said he sees barbershop as something that will remain a part of his life. While he noted he may not be as committed as some of the 80-year-old singers he saw perform in Reno, he said it is something that can at least be done in his free time. Hansen said the success of the group this year has him hopeful that some assembly required could become a staple of the district. It went over so well this time, I think that it could really become a theater program here that people will want to take part in and support, he said. There are several photographs accompanying this article that I'll try to explain to you. One of them pictures an old upright piano, the kind that have been in school buildings for decades, and around it is a group of five young people and their teacher, and they are practicing around this piano. A close-up shows Blake Eggers and Brandon Schmidt, who are juniors, performing a piece with they're holding sticks of some kind, which turn out to be very long-handled toilet plungers. And you can see that in another photo that pictures John Lones, who is performing with the group. They're using these like canes. In the final, more artistic photograph, all of the young men are wearing black trousers and light gray sports jackets, and they are in dance positions holding these toilet plungers at a variety of angles, and they're balanced on a leg and they're leaning forward, and one of them is even doing the splits. It looks like they are well rehearsed and having a wonderful time. It notes in the caption that this group is the first from Illinois to be invited to an international convention in Las Vegas. Another front page article has this headline: Richland appoints its former president as interim leader. And the dateline is Decatur, written by Chris Lusvardi. Richland Community College will turn to a familiar leader following the retirement of President Gail Saunders at the end of the month. Former Richland president Charles Chuck Novak, whom Saunders replaced in 2001 after he retired, will return as interim president. Board Chairman Bruce Campbell said Monday the search for Saunders' permanent replacement will continue while Novak brings a sense of stability to the position. He has a great appreciation for Richland, Campbell said. He is well known in the community, and it's a natural fit. Novak, 73, has most recently been working with the city of DuQuoin as a special projects consultant after starting last spring as interim finance director. A permanent finance director has since been named, but Mayor Guy Alonji said Novak's duties were expanded. While DuQuoin is a place Novak calls home, as he said, his wife, Mary Jo, has family in the area, he is looking forward to returning to Decatur. It has been nice to us and our children, said Novak, who spent just over 12 years as Richland president. Alonji understands Novak's interest in returning to Richland, given his extensive background working in education and finance. The two met 12 years ago when Alonji was chairman of the Illinois Community College Board. Alonji called Novak a financial guru and somebody who is well respected in the educational field for his leadership abilities. He will be a perfect fit up there, Alonji said. He knows the community. He knows the staff. He will do a great job until the position is filled full time. After 15 years, Saunders hopes to be leaving Richland positioned to continue what has been started, particularly by reacting quickly to serve the communities it represents. Richland, along with the entire community college system, has come a long way from where it started more than 40 years ago, she said last week to the Decatur Rotary International Club 180. We have become the premier academic center in the region, Saunders said. There's more to do to make the future brighter for students in this district and beyond. That will enable the community to thrive, grow, and prosper. Saunders said Richland faces a challenge with cost reductions becoming necessary to balance the budget, as money from the state has not been received as anticipated. She said the college will need to operate conservatively to weather a stormy time in Illinois history. Novak has dealt with fallout from the state budget situation while working with the city of DuQuoin. He is preparing to assess the budget at Richland and what needs to be done as the college continues to miss its funding from the state. Novak started at Richland in 1989 and was the college's fifth president. He had been the longest-serving chief executive before Saunders. Saunders announced her retirement in October. Previous presidents, including Murray Deutsch from 1972 to 1979, James Becker from 79 to 80, John Kirk from 80 to 85, and Howard Brown from 85 to 1989. Since his retirement from Richland, Novak has worked in positions including interim president of Morton College in Cicero, Illinois Valley Community College in Oglesby, and Frontier Community College in Fairfield. At the same time, he has remained interested in what's happening at Richland while holding the President Emeritus title, with one of his most recent visits last year during the Farm Progress Show. Novak said it was the first time he had been to Farm Progress since Decatur started in 2005 as a permanent rotating host of the event. It was unbelievable, Novak said. The quality of the exhibits was amazing. Novak said his priority upon returning to Richland will be to help move the presidential search along, which can bring stability to the college. He praised Saunders' performance. Saunders, while grateful for the time she has had in Decatur, is ready to move into retirement and spend time traveling and with family. A reception for her will be held 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, February 16th, in the Schilling Center at Richland, before her final board meeting, which is scheduled for 6:15 p.m. It's time for somebody with a new sense of energy to come in, said Saunders, whose last day is scheduled for February 29th. Details of a search committee for the president's position are being finalized, Campbell said. No deadlines to complete the search have been established. The board is working on the national search process with the Association of Community College Trustees. It's something we want to be pursuing as quickly as we can, Campbell said. We want to get the top talent we can to get to carry on the tradition of excellence that has been started. Novak doesn't have a set timetable for returning to DeCoin. Alonji considers Novak on loan to Richland and hopes he returns once his work is done in Decatur. We'll turn now to another article that has to do with education. And the dateline is Decatur. It was written by Valerie Wells. The headline reads, Book Blind Dates Paying Off. Sixth graders know what they like to read, and they mostly stick to it. Their favorite books might be about sports or mysteries or the still popular Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And they might be missing out on some books they'd love if they gave them a chance. South Shore's school librarian, Donna Colleen, borrowed an idea from the Mount Zion Library to create Blind Date with a Book. Choosing a variety of books suitable for sixth grade reading levels and interests, she wrapped them in Valentine colored papers of red and pink, labeled them with hints such as adventure or history or award, meaning it's an award winner, and set them up in the library. This is a quote from Killeen. So far, every child but one wanted to participate. I tell them I'd like for them to try reading something they wouldn't normally read, to take a chance on something they might not pick up off the shelf. She provides them with book review format forms and asks for their promise that if they don't like the book after they begin reading it, that they'll read at least half of it and be specific about why they didn't like it on the review. Every child who turns in a review will be entered into a drawing for a prize basket that includes pencils, a t-shirt, coupons for restaurants, and such things. GT Church, which has adopted South Shores, promised financial assistance in providing prizes. Maria Dent, director of the Mount Zion Library, said she too borrowed the idea from someone else, and in her version, only adult library patrons were offered the mystery book option, but it was for the same reason. You don't know what you're going to get into until you open it up, she said. We have a rating sheet, and they fill that out and put it in our box, and we have a drawing and a couple of nice prizes. A lot of them come in and say, I never would have read this. It's to encourage them to expand their horizons. The fifth graders have asked Colleen to do the same activity for them, and she has begun wrapping books in blue paper with the theme yet to be determined. It takes a long time to wrap books, she said, so she restricts it to one book per student. Sixth grader Devrian Bass, who at first seemed doubtful about the whole idea of checking out a book without knowing what it was vocally and visibly delighted when he unwrapped his and found Woods Runner by Gary Paulson. I like the cover, he said to explain his reaction. It looks like a good book. If you've been hearing about the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, perhaps you'd like to know what that might have to do with Decatur's water. And we turn to an article now Entitled Decatur Water Chief Explains Flint Crisis. This was written by Allison Petty. The devastating contamination in Flint, Michigan, has drawn national attention to issues of lead poisoning and water safety. Decatur's Director of Water Management, Keith Alexander, addressed the Rotary Club of Decatur No. 180 on Monday to answer an important question: could a similar crisis happen here? No, he said, with a 99.9% degree of certainty. There's always a chance for error when humans are involved, but Alexander detailed multiple measures the city takes to protect water customers. Problems in Flint began when that city switched from water treated by the Detroit Water Authority to the Flint River in an effort to save money. The new water corroded the pipes that contained lead. This is a quotation from Alexander. The new water literally leached or chemically took the lead out of the piping system and unfortunately delivered it to the tap of the citizens in the city of Flint. This is from Alexander, who grew up in Michigan and drank the Detroit system's water as a child. Lead has been used in water distribution systems for hundreds of years in increasingly smaller portions, Alexander said, but treatment strategies can prevent dangerous amounts from entering drinking water. The city of Decatur uses lime to soften water, and the treated water leaves behind a calcium carbonate coating on pipes. The city also adds a small amount of phosphate to make the protective layer stronger. That's another thing that we do literally every second that we're applying water to protect the public health and reduce the chance of lead getting into your drinking water, Alexander said. I intended to say supplying water. Every second that we're supplying water, is what he said. 9 employees in the water treatment plant and 3 water distribution supervisors are state-certified drinking water operators. The city tests water 60 times a day, or more than 1,000 times a week, so changes in the water chemistry can be detected quickly, Alexander said. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency requires that the city test specifically for lead once every 3 years. This is done by sampling water from 30 homes, half of which were built before 1937 and half of which were built before 1985. We're looking at basically the worst case scenario throughout town to see if we're going to find any lead in our drinking water, he said. I'm happy to report that we've been doing this for decades and we do not have excess lead in the drinking water in those 30 locations. The most recent test was conducted in 2014 and revealed 3.2 parts per billion of lead, well below the agency's limit of 15 parts per billion. The city's most recent water quality report can be found on its website, decaturil.gov, under the Public Information section. Here's an article on the topic of crime and courts. It was written by Huey Freeman, and this is the headline: Drunken Man Slashes Tire in Liquor Store Drive-Thru. Sammy L. Lowe, Jr., 55, of Decatur, was arrested after he allegedly slashed the tires of a couple as they sat in a liquor store drive-through line, then drove away while under the influence of alcohol. About 5:30 p.m. Saturday, a man and woman were at the 22nd Street Discount Liquor Store, 22nd and Locust Streets, where Lowe, quote, walked along the left side of their vehicle and continued walking past the drive-through window, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Catherine Boland. After Lowe left the area, the vehicle moved forward. The couple noticed that their tire was going flat and the vehicle was difficult to drive. Officers discovered a 1-inch-long puncture to the left rear tire. A liquor store employee saw Lowe as he, quoting again from the affidavit, walked up toward the rear left tire of the vehicle, then struck or sliced the rear left tire of the vehicle. Part of the incident was captured on surveillance video. Officers who watched the footage saw Lowe walk from the left side of the vehicle eastward through the drive-in lane. That's the drive-through lane. He appeared to be carrying a set of keys with him. When officers caught up with Lowe about 15 minutes later, they found a knife on his key ring. Lowe was located at a store on the 1200 block of East Grand Avenue. Officers observed Sammy's eyes to be glossy and bloodshot. His speech was slurred, and he appeared to have a difficult time standing without swaying or stumbling from side to side, quoting the report. Lowe admitted that he drove his vehicle from the liquor store to the store on Grand. His driver's license has been suspended since April 8, 2010, and he had no insurance for his vehicle. Police found an open beer can in his vehicle next to the driver's seat. A breath test showed a blood alcohol content of 0.177%, more than twice the legal limit for driving in Illinois. Lowe was booked into the Macon County Jail on charges of criminal damage to property and aggravated DUI. His bond was set at $7,500, and he posted $750 bail and was released. His arraignment is March 8th. Lowe has 20 prior criminal convictions, mostly in Macon County. He has served 6 prison sentences, including a 6-year term in 1991 for aggravated battery, great bodily harm in Las Vegas, and a 2002 1-year sentence for aggravated assault on a correctional officer in Decatur. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the February 9th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.